Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Haworth, with my sidekick, Sean.
Hello.
Hello, Sean. How are you doing this week?
Pretty good. I'm excited for this show tonight.
All right.
I am.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a few weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, how ghosts are the big one, right?
Right.
Along with UFOs.
Absolutely.
And that's really true. That's, you know, who doesn't have a sighting of a UFO? I don't necessarily mean extraterrestrials, but I mean, you know, literally an unidentified flying object.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone's seen
absolutely
those.
You know, and I agree with you on both of these. We were talking last week when we were talking to Greg from Minnesota Ghost Box, a paranormal investigator. And he was a very nuts and bolts investigator, all about sort of getting the information and seeing what he can learn from that. And our guest tonight, Ryan Sprague from Somewhere in the Skies, is very much the same.
Yes.
And I find that on these larger topics, you really sort of have people that fall into one of two categories. And they're both very interesting. But one category is that they have all the answers.
Right. They have a framework and all the evidence fits.
And we're wondering where those answers came from. and you know, sometimes we find the sources to be a little questionable, especially as a skeptic as I am. You know, I listen. Of course, I want to know the story. I want to learn. But then you have those guys that I really feel are a little more down the lines of who I am, and that is that they're just asking the questions and collecting the answers and seeing if they can extrapolate anything from that data. You know,
that's right.
And I feel that Ryan really is this. I put a lot of time into reading, you know, I always research our guests, but in the case of Ryan today, I actually listened to about five of his podcasts and read most of his book, and you know, I plan on finishing the book because
I'm into it. Well,
you
wouldn't have done that if it wasn't interesting.
Right, yeah. You know? So I put a lot of time into
not that
into
we
this
are not dedicated professionals.
Right, right.
But
I definitely put extra time into this one because I was so interested in our guests, so I'm pretty excited about this one. Yeah.
Well, where are you on, you know, UFOs and how they grab you? I guess because I think it varies for different people. You know, some people are more the Bigfoot types, some people are more the ghost types.
Well, of all the, I wish there was a blanket term that I could use for
what we talk about,
conspiracies, mysteries, unexplained, all that. As far as all of them are concerned, the one thing that I definitely believe is that there is life somewhere out there.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. I don't know if that makes me believe that there are aliens visiting us, either in the remote past or in the present.
The proposition that they're somewhere in the universe, though. That's
but it definitely makes all that more plausible.
Down to earth.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I know that somewhere out there, there's mold. I think within my lifetime, we'll at least find out that we found some kind of evidence of microbial life outside of Earth. You know, and we already have a few things that are questionable evidence, but I think we'll have within my lifetime.
Sure, we have amino acids floating through space. You know,
right.
We've got organic molecules that form spontaneously.
Yeah, there's that meteorite that they think might have fossilized bacteria in it, but it's smaller than any bacteria on Earth, so they're not entirely sure, but they think it might have come from Mars. And these aren't even conspiracy
things. Don't
touch
that if you've read the Andromeda Strain.
Yeah, totally. And these aren't conspiracy theorists saying these things.
Right.
These are mainstream scientists saying these things. And so when you tie that in with the conspiracy theorists and the UFO researchers, I really feel that within my lifetime we're going to...
What we're talking about tonight is flying objects, you know, craft.
Right,
created by intelligent beings.
Now, the part I get a little iffy, and I'm curious to see how Ryan feels about these things. The part I get a little iffy is when we start to get into abductions and different species of alien, and when we start to get into what their agendas are and stuff like that. You know, I start to...
Those explanations almost always involve a massive cover-up story, which is the part that I find harder to swallow. When
right, and they involve unnamed sources or some sort of telepathic communications to the, you know, to the Crab Nebula or something.
I mean, we've talked to psychics on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's always been a question for me for psychics. Like, you know, well, we had the one psychic,
right.
Suzanne Freed.
Who said, oh, yes, we definitely pick up aliens.
Yeah, yeah, and I thought that was really interesting, you know, and because that's always been a question of mine. It's like, well, I mean, if you
thought you were being really clever and subverting her whole thing. And
right,
you're like,
right.
Oh, no, there are aliens.
Yeah, if you can reach into the ether and get my grandfather, why can't you reach out there and get Snorlax from... From whatever,
from
you know.
Juice
yeah, 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 yeah. So, I don't know. But I do know that Ryan, from everything that I've covered, is a very down-to-earth researcher. Somebody who really doesn't pretend to know facts that he can't verify and is really just kind of collecting stories, finding correlations. And I really kind of appreciate that in what he's doing.
Yeah. You know, that's something I've noticed a lot. Whenever I read UFO theories, it always fits into, like, the specific political framework of
right.
the person who's proposing it. You
right.
know, I read this book once, this very environmentally conscious guy writing about how, you know, the Bush administration is hiding these aliens so that, you know, we have to keep consuming oil.
Right.
And then some other guy saying, no, these other administrations are hiding this alien.
Right. And they coincidentally have orange skin, and it's crazy.
Right. But you
right.
see what I'm saying.
It's I do.
Always.
I do.
And that falls into the kind of the they have all the answers people, you know.
Well, that's why I always kind of appreciated the ancient alien research, is that none of that had anything to do with anything other than
right.
looking into antiquity and seeing
right.
what we had there, and it had very little to do with political agenda or personal agenda, you know.
Yeah.
Although arguably it could be said that the agenda is to sell books, you know. I mean,
but that's different.
Right, right. Yeah. But, you know, everybody's got to make a living. All right, so you're listening to Radio Wasteland. Our guest tonight is Ryan Sprague, UFO researcher and author and host of the podcast Somewhere in the Skies. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. We'll be back in a few. All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland with our guest, Ryan Sprague. Ryan, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Am I pronouncing your last name correctly, Ryan?
You could not have said it better, my man.
All right, all right.
I appreciate that.
I was calling you something else, which I won't say to confuse anybody, but when I started listening to your podcast is when I caught the pronunciation, and I'm all, oh, no.
It's Prague with an S, so I appreciate it.
All right. So I have to say that I research all of my guests, and I enjoy doing it, but when I started researching you, I have to say that I have committed a good... 10 hours, 12 hours into your stuff, all of your podcasts. I listened to about five of them. I got about five in, and I got probably about three quarters of the way through your book before this happened, and I'm sure I will finish it up when we're done. I really appreciate the way that that you do this. You know, you have a view that I feel that I identify with. I find that I'm a little bit skeptical. As cheesy as it is, I always say that I'm like Fox Mulder, that I want to believe, but I don't actually believe, but I really want to, and I want people to tell me their stories that will help me to believe in it. And I find that you seem to be coming from somewhat of the same angle.
Oh, absolutely, man. I think that's a wonderful point. I mean, that poster is so iconic in pop culture that I want to believe,
right.
you know, rather than I do believe. And I think that's the question we continue asking ourselves every day when dealing with all these topics, UFOs or any of the other stuff you cover on your show as well, is that need and that want to believe in something. And I think that this mystery of UFOs is one of the biggest, but also one of the messiest as well. So I appreciate that you took the time to check out my work. And just like you guys, I'm trying to find answers. And whether I like those answers or not, you know, I think that's what's most important, too.
Yeah, well, I would say that, you know, I appreciate that, but I think we're coming from a little bit more of an angle of entertainment journalism, where we like to have guests on and then learn about them and move to another guest, maybe another topic. But man, when I was listening to you, especially your initial show with Dolan, is his last name?
Yes, Richard Dolan.
Richard
yes.
Dolan, man, you guys were. on it with the facts right off the tops of your guys' heads. You are definitely deeper into this specific topic than I am, but still with a very skeptical, questioning mind. How did you get started doing in this? You had an experience when you were younger?
I did, yes. I mean, my skepticism was it was challenged pretty early in my life. I was 12 years old. I had a UFO sighting. I was fishing in upstate New York, right near the border of Canada. I was, like I said, 12 years old. I'm listening to Green Day on my headphones. It's pitch black out. I'm fishing.
The typical 12-year-old experience.
Exactly, man.
You remember 12.
Yeah. And I remember I'm reeling my line in, and I see this reflection of three white lights in the water. So, you know, naturally I look up, and I'd say maybe, I was 12. I can't remember specifically, but maybe like 200-300 feet up, I see this triangular formation, the white lights, and then this sort of red hazy sphere in the center, kind of, you know, what we know now is the triangular UFO, very prototypical. I couldn't see any structure. You know, I couldn't see any mechanism to it. I could only see the lights, but I also couldn't see any of the stars behind the formation. So, freaking out at this point. I rip my headphones off. I'm yelling for my dad to come outside. And this thing is just floating over the water silently. And I remember feeling like this. Almost like a low vibration, like if you're at a rock concert, you feel that bass, right, just like inside your organs, you know. And my dad eventually came out. He saw the thing as it floated off towards the Canadian border. So he thought it was a plane. He saw the tail end of the, you know, the bottom of the triangle, and tried to convince me of that. But, Chauncey, I knew at that age that whatever I saw, it wasn't just a conventional aircraft. And I became obsessed after that, man. I was scared. That turned to obsession, and I've been looking at this topic ever since.
Right. Well, you definitely put time into it. I'm really kind of amazed at the amount of time that you've been able to put into it and dig into it. You seem to be, you know, like a very like nuts and bolts researcher is what I keep referring to the people as, who collect the data and sort of try to put the data together to find correlations, as opposed to people who take other people's opinions and run with them. You seem to be very nuts and bolts. And so when it came to your book, Somewhere in the Skies, it seems to be mainly like interviews with people. It's like your experience and then a bunch of other people's experiences that people are able to sort of put together and try to understand. Did you reach out to all of these people?
That's a great question. It is kind of the antithesis of nuts and bolts research, which I've been doing my whole life, is, like you said, gathering data and gathering, you know, trying to find these correlations between the hard data. My book is very different. I'd sort of grown tired of hearing the same damn UFO cases over and over again, you know, with no evidence, no proof, nothing I could hold in my hands. So when I decided to write the book, I kind of pushed that whole nuts and bolts thing aside, and I focused solely on the individual having the sighting, or, you know, the possible contact or abduction experience. I put a microscope on them and see how it affected their life on every level, you know, socially, psychologically, religiously, philosophically. You know, what did they think happened to them? Not what did I think happened, or what some quote-unquote UFO expert thought happened to them. What did they think happened? How did it change them? And that's sort of what I went with. And, you know, I spoke to many face-to-face. I would travel to go meet these people. Others were through Skype video calls or phone calls. And I needed to see their reactions, the way they compose themselves when they're reliving or retelling these sightings or experiences. You know, I'm first and foremost a playwright at heart here in New York City, and I always want to know what makes people tick, you know, what dig deep into that human condition to see what makes them say the things they say and do the things they do. And that's always been my strength as a writer, and I wanted to bring that into the UFO field as well, because I don't know if it's ever been done on that level.
My partner in crime here, Sean, has a question for you.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering what you found in terms of, you know, you take these individual interesting experiences and you put them under a microscope and really try to analyze them. I'm wondering if you found correlations or commonalities or what popped out.
That's what I was wondering. Absolutely. Were you surprised either by everything lining up, or were you surprised by how different they all were?
Yeah.
Oh, it was a mess. I mean, I can't wrap this in a bow, guys, you know, and maybe I thought that was possible when I started the project, as I think a lot of UFO researchers or cryptid researchers do. They think they'll find one answer for this stuff, but guys, that doesn't exist. It's just whatever, in my opinion, first of all, that doesn't happen. This mystery is too big. It's too complex. There's so much going on. And there's just so much to it. Everyone has their own, you know, when it comes to UFO sighting or experience, everyone has their own perception of that, you know, whatever their political beliefs are, their religious beliefs, their sociological beliefs, their scientific beliefs, that is going to affect what they saw and how they come forward with it. So, like I said, putting that microscope on them, I learned a lot about these people, and it was more about how it changed them, how it changed their belief system, how it shook things up, how the community perceived them afterwards, how their husband or their wife or their kid perceived them. That implication to these events is what I found most fascinating. You know, as a playwright, your one number one thing is your character has to change by the end of the play. And again, that's kind of how I went into this, is how did this affect you? What did you learn from it? And what are you going to take forward with that? So, again, no, I did not find any, you know, one source or one answer for it. It was messy. I'm still trying to figure out. And I can guarantee you there's going to be more books for sure.
Did you find with the people that you were – so even in doing this radio show where, like I told you, we're a little more journalistic entertainment than we are hardcore research – but even in doing what we do, I find a lot of people, you know, raised eyebrows and a little bit of mockery at what I'm doing, or I tell them and they laugh and then they tell me how cool it is. But it starts with a laugh, you know. Did you find that a lot of these people were hesitant to talk to you?
That is a really good question. Some of them, yes. I mean, there's always, you know, that ridicule factor that comes with all of this. We know that. We've all gotten that side-eyed glance, or we see the smirks or hear the X-Files music. And what I wanted to be clear about with the people who I reached out to or came to me is that this book was about them, and I would not use pseudonyms. They had to use their real names, and a lot of people aren't comfortable with that. You know, this, once your name's out there in a UFO book, guys, right, you're really sending yourself out to the wolves, I think.
Right. Your future in psychiatry is over.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, as we've seen many times with many psychologists and whatnot. But yeah, I wanted them to embrace the experience and be excited to talk about it. So I told them, you know, off the bat, like, I'm going to tell your story as sincere and as accurate as I can. And I really worked with them. You know, there were late night phone calls. Yes.
I'm sorry to cut you off. We're coming up on break. I hope you'll stick around for a couple few minutes, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. All right. Welcome back to Radio Wasteland. We're here with our guest, Ryan Sprague, UFO author and host of the podcast Somewhere in the Skies. Hey, Ryan, before the break, we were talking about your process of writing your book, and we were talking here during the break about how the book is titled Somewhere in the Skies, A Human Approach to an Alien Phenomenon, and we were realizing that, you know, I initially wanted to ask you why it was titled that, but I assume that it was titled that because of your human approach that you've taken to it as opposed to collecting the research. And you were talking about how much it had changed people, so did you notice that people were drastically changed? And in what ways were their lives changed by these experiences?
Yeah, I mean, again, it does vary from person to person, but there were some individuals that really struck me in terms of what happened afterwards. I know a guy who in Florida had these orange orb sightings over a body of water in his backyard, and this would happen. It would keep happening. And then eventually, this guy who had never been an artist before, all of a sudden started painting these extremely geometrical patterns and became an artist after that, to the point where he was professionally selling his art. And it was almost as if something had been unlocked in his mind. Now, I'm not saying this is directly correlated to the event. I cannot prove that. I cannot say that. But it did come out of nowhere, and it did come directly after he had these experiences.
Gentleman. No, I get it. It, you know, I mean, one implication is that it programmed him. But another implication could be just solely that it freed him to think outside of the box, you know.
Absolutely. You know, it's almost like unlocking something that's been closed off. And I think that goes for belief, too. I mean, I know one gentleman, he had a quote-unquote abduction experience, and he saw an image of praying hands with a lightning bolt through it that he was shown by these entities or whoever took him. And after that, he moved out of New York City, moved down to the South, and became the preacher at a church. And started talking about the connection between UFOs and the Bible. So it is a huge spectrum of change that happens to these people, for sure.
Right.
And I assume some people just went on with their day, pretty much, or...
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's one gentleman who, he told me his story, and I asked him, like, well, do you ever think about it, or do you ever wonder what it was? And he just said, nope, it happened. You know, I saw it. It was pretty... incredible. It was, you know, it made me think differently, and I just kept driving down the road, went to a bar, had a beer, and never thought about it again. So wow. It really does depend. Yeah, and again, it's the individual, I think, and how they react and what they take from the event. Some people become very depressed and paranoid after thinking it's going to happen again, and others embrace it. They think it's, you know, they take a more metaphysical route, like this, open their eyes to the world around them.
Right.
They were given a message. So, again, guys, it's just, it's messy, it's big, and I think we're only scratching the surface.
Yeah, well, the movies, you know, will have us believe that, you know, you have your UFO sighting, and all of a sudden you're building a volcano out of mashed potatoes. You know, you're not able to focus. You've become, you know, did you find anybody who's... You know, I mean, I hate to get entertainment out of this, which is really what our conversation is for some people. But did you find anybody whose life was really kind of ruined by this experience?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had one woman who had a triangular UFO sighting in Michigan with her two daughters.
Similar to yours, triangular UFO.
Yes, well. Exactly. This seems to be a very popular type of sighting, for sure. And after that happened, they started having all this bizarre stuff happen in their home. High strangeness, poltergeist activity, almost paranormal after a UFO event. So you got to wonder, is this all somehow connected? This was a religious family, and they took this as evil. This was something demonic, and it ripped the family apart. You know, the daughters and the mother stopped talking for a long time. She became very, you know, shut in and depressed, and the daughters just wanted to forget the whole thing happened. Eventually, they came back together, they prayed, and it stopped for the daughters, the experiences, but it's still happening to the mother. And I do talk to her on occasion. So, again, you know, this isn't all love and light, whatever it is. This is changing people, sometimes for good, sometimes not so good. And it really depends on how the person takes the experience and what they do with it.
Right. So this might be somewhat of a polarizing question that I have for you. But, you know, in your first paragraph of the very first chapter of your book, you said anyone who says that they have complete answer to UFOs should be handled with healthy skepticism. And from following you on social media and stuff like that, which you're very active on. I'd like our listeners to know if they're interested. you seemed to have some people that your opinions are at odds with. And I don't mean that you're in any way attacky, because you're not, but you're definitely willing to say that, you know, I don't really want to address that because I feel that maybe this person's out for money or this person is out for scare tactic or anything like that. Do you find that this is a common thing that you run into?
It is from time to time. I mean, again, It's so hard with a topic like this, guys, because we have the study of UFOs and we have belief. So when you're dealing with a belief system, it is extremely easy to take advantage of that if you are that type of person to do something like that. You know, someone will latch on to anything you say and to find the answers. You know, give me $20 to continue my research here, $30 here. It happens. This field and many others have many charlatans. And for anyone who says they have all the answers, like you mentioned, I tell you, run. Run away as fast as you can.
Right.
Because none of us are experts on this. And if they pretend to be, then that's not really something I would recommend people look at. Yes, we want to find answers. But if someone says that they have the absolute truth and nothing else, you know, can be accepted, I have a problem with that. And I will be vocal about it, for sure. And that does not mean that I am not guilty of these things from time to time as well. I do not take advantage of people's beliefs. I try to keep my beliefs out of this and remain as objective as humanly possible. It's not easy. You know, you get so embedded in it. I often use, you know, the analogy of a wartime journalist. You know, they can be as objective as they want covering something, but they're so deeply embedded in it that it's going to affect them. It's going to change their beliefs. So,
I think the wartime journalism is a great example because, you know, I think a lot of people get caught up in this attitude of, well, this guy's doing it for money. And, you know, we all need to eat. And so this wartime journalist who's out there is out there for two reasons. One is to document it as a journalist. The other is to get a paycheck. You know, and so I think a lot of people sort of knock down some of this as people who are just trying to get a paycheck. But I'll tell you, audience, right now, I mean, I do a radio show, and frankly, I would like to get paid more. And I think just about everybody would say that. So, but I agree. And I like your term charlatans. I do think that there are a lot of people out there trying to manipulate people specifically through fear for money.
Yeah. Exactly. It is a fear tactic. And there's no easier way to make someone vulnerable than to scare them. But, you know, I can agree with you, man. I'm not a millionaire off of this UFO thing. I'm lucky if I get anything off of the books I sell. And that all goes back to the money I spent to go out and visit these people and meet them and research and travel to go to conferences and stuff like that. Like, there is not money to be made in these fields unless you are some huge person out there with a New York Times bestseller or a major Hollywood movie. That's just not the way it is.
Right.
So most of us, we work quietly, we work underground, and we're just trying to find answers.
Right. So this was kind of an extension off of my initial question there of running into people. So you do go to these conventions, and I assume maybe every once in a while you speak at them. I haven't caught any of that yet. But do you find yourself running into people who know that you disagree with them? How is that dealt with at these things, or is it?
It's amazing what alcohol can do, guys.
yeah, it's a hell of a
it
drug.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, there's been times where I've had heated discussions, mostly over the internet. I am a product of my generation for sure, but you don't agree with these people, and I think that's good. I think that's healthy. There's a debate there. So if I go to a conference and I know for a fact that I don't agree with someone on something, you know, I'm not going to out them in front of, you know, what, 1,000, 2,000 people and say, you're wrong. No, like, let them have their peace. Let them tell what they have to tell. And then come have a beer with me in the bar and let's discuss it.
Right.
That's when I think you get a lot of the real answers and the real facts about these things. We tend to self-edit at times, or right. We tend to play to a certain kind of crowd. And that's not always the best thing, but it happens every now and again. So I think when you really can get someone at their core and, you know, with their guard down, that's when you're going to get the most interesting information. And look, you know, I can disagree with people, but that doesn't mean I hate them. I think, you know, in the world today, we live in such extremes and we forget that there is an in-between. So I think that goes for this topic as well.
Nothing will do it like booze. We're coming up on our final break here. And we'll be back in just a couple few minutes with our host, our guest, Ryan Sprague. Welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Ryan Sprague. We're talking about UFOs. Hey, Ryan, I'm curious on what's your take on, a big part of what got me into this was sort of the fantasy of it all. I am a horror movie fanatic, and I have been ever since I was a little kid, and it really started to prime the questions in my brain, like, hey, is any of this actually based on something? And that's really where a lot of this kind of came from. So I find that my imagination is very tickled by, although I'm very skeptical of, the different types of aliens that people say are out there. There are greys and reptilians and Nordic people and all this stuff. What's your take on that stuff?
Yeah, that's there is a wide variety of aliens reported for sure. I will admit, in my experience, and I've interviewed hundreds of individuals who've claimed abductions at this point. The only types of aliens that I've personally come across in the people I've interviewed are the greys, the prototypical big head, big black eyes, small body, and sometimes these humanoid-looking entities, half human, half alien, some sort of hybrid. And that's really about it. That's all I can say is those are the reports that I've seen. That's not to say that there aren't reptilians out there disguised as politicians or, the local clerk at your bank, but who really knows? I've never come across them in the testimony I've heard. I've only heard of these greys, and I've only heard of these human-looking things.
To be honest, I'm a little biased because I've seen They Live with Rowdy Roddy Piper like 15 times, and I imagine that as being this sort of, the concept is kind of, stuck in my head, and then, growing up with these, I grew up listening to punk bands, with a mohawk, and I kind of have these, ideas that, the government is controlling us with also fits in with They Live. So the reptilian thing definitely, tickled my fancy, but I don't think I've ever heard somebody who I would chalk up as being truly credible on any of them other than the greys, I think.
Yeah. I would have to agree with you, man. And, the abduction phenomenon in general is extremely complex, controversial, and the fact that people are seeing all these different aliens, you do have to wonder, is there some galactic federation and they're all sort of taking their turns experimenting on the humans? I don't know. Like you said earlier, I'm not a researcher who's going to preach to anyone about what is going on. I'm only trying to find answers myself and relay what I'm told and what I come across. So grays and humanoids for me, my man.
Yeah, what about different types of craft or types of sighting? You mentioned earlier orange orbs, you mentioned triangular crafts. I'm wondering if there is actually some taxonomy you've discovered of these are the five or six types that you see, or is it really random?
That's a wonderful question, and I often connect that sort of that question, Sean, to sociology. This could go for, I could go on forever about this. I know we're on a very big time crunch, but these crafts seem to change with time, with the decades. The 50s, the 60s, we've got saucers. 70s, 80s, we're looking at triangles. Now we're looking, in the past couple decades, at these orbs or these plasmas in the sky. It seems as if almost whatever these things are, again, I'm not saying they're alien, but they are unexplained. We can't identify them. They seem to be evolving with the time, with technology. They remain elusive no matter what they are. Everything from a flying, saucer up till today, where we're still seeing triangles, and then we're seeing these weird orbs, these energies floating through the sky, making intelligent movement and then disappearing. So yeah, it's very interesting, and it's a lot of commentary on what's going on in the world at that time, when these things have been reported.
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot, too, with the changing reports of the changing views of the ships. But I always kind of fall back on the idea that, 1918 or whatever, it wasn't that long ago that we went from the Model T to the Chevy minivan, you know, mm-hmm. and so, you know, we might be seeing evolving. And I think this, as far as like evolving crafts, you know, people would go, well, they are aliens or super advanced. Well, they might not be aliens. You know, they might be us with evolving technology, and the technology might be evolving in the same way to the point where we are seeing drastically different things from decade to decade.
Great point. That is a theory many people have. You know, maybe these aliens, maybe why they look so human or they look less human is because they are from our future and they're coming back to warn us that this is what's going to happen. That's a very big, you know, thing in the contactee or the abduction phenomenon, is they're given these messages that, look, stop doing what you're doing. This is what's going to happen. This is what you're going to look like.
Yeah, there seems to be a big subsect of people talking about UFO sightings around nuclear power plants and missile silos and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I definitely have noticed this.
And I mean, that's based solely in fact. Those things have happened, you know, but whether or not they're sending some sort of message, I couldn't tell you. But it is a lot more common than I think people think, and it's still happening, and it's happened way more than it should, where these things have ostensibly shut down or even almost launched nuclear missiles. So if they have that capability, whatever they are, that's scary, and that's something we have to keep in mind for sure.
Well, before you're out of here, I can't let you go without asking this question, because this is something that I was very interested in when I found out about you. I am from California, and as you know, everybody from California surfs, you know, and that's what I do. I live about 5 hours from the ocean, but of course I surf. And you are from New York, where everybody apparently is a playwright. When I found out that you were a playwright, I'm just like, wow, that's totally interesting. You know, and I'm sure the two don't have much to do together other than the ability to write and put your thoughts together. But how did you get started being a playwright? It's very interesting to me.
Yeah, theater, it's an aspect of my life that I hold really dear. I was an athlete growing up, played baseball. You know, I played a little in college as well, but I always had a keen interest in musicals and acting, you know, and that was not something I was going to admit to my other guy friends growing up, you know, but I gave it a try in high school. You know, I was in Bye Bye Birdie. I was in Damn Yankees. I was in Grease, and I caught the bug, guys. I caught it, and I started studying theater when I got to college.
I was definitely reared on musicals and theater myself, and that's why I was so interested in the fact that you did it, because it's something that I was reared on as well.
Yeah, and I went on some national tours. I acted, and then I found that I actually enjoyed writing the plays rather than acting them. So I got into that. I planted myself down in New York City, and it's been a whirlwind ever since. I mean, I just had my first feature film of one of my plays come out that I adapted. I've got a horror play. You'll probably like this, my man. I've got a horror play coming out in October here in the city, so I'll get you some tickets for that.
All right. I'll save up for that plane ticket.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I'm not doing the UFO thing, I'm writing plays. And again, it comes back to the people. You know, I want to create new theater and try to make people think and feel, which I think we're lacking today in the world. So, you know, and that goes for UFOs as well.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we're coming up on the end of our show here, so I want to give you a chance to make sure that our audience knows how to find out more about you. Where can they find out more about you?
Absolutely. I'm all, like you said, all over Facebook, Twitter. Just look up Ryan Sprague. I'm sure you'll find me. My main website is somewhereintheskies.com. I've got articles there. You can find my podcast of the same name, Somewhere in the Skies, there as well. And the book is available on Amazon, paperback and ebook. So really easy to find me. And that's it, guys. That's it. That's all I got.
All right. Well, it's been really great having you on the show, and I really appreciate having you on. You know, like I said, I'm always happy to have a researcher that is down to earth. You know, don't get me wrong. I enjoy the guys who are telling me about things that are blowing my mind. But I also like to know that there are the people who are building the foundations of these things that something can be built on. And I definitely feel that you are one of those.
Well, thanks, man. My mantra always is keep your feet on the ground, but always keep looking somewhere in the sky. So I think that's very, very good, and I know you're a good egg, and we're going to continue researching together, my man.
All right, sounds good. You've been listening to Ryan Sprague on Radio Wasteland. Thank you very much for checking us out.